Good afternoon, KINS. No, listen, I'm wrong, Greg. I get fired up here. I have a tough time controlling. It's Thursday, February the 20th, 51st day of the new year. Today's not Washington's birthday, is it? Is that the 22nd? I think it's the 22nd.
It's Lincoln's.
Lincoln was the 12th. See, I'm still having to deal with this concept of President's Week, President's Day, instead of Lincoln and Washington. I mean, that's probably, when you went through school.
Yeah, I had to memorize that, but I've forgotten it.
Had to know whose birthday you were taking off when you didn't go to school. Boy, that's a high bar to step over, isn't it?
Still trying.
Yeah, tell me about it. Joining us this afternoon is campus minister and deacon in training, huh?
Yes, yep.
Craig Brown from St. Bernard / Fortuna.
Good afternoon, Mr. Papstein.
Okay, we'll work on the mister. We'll work on the good also when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggy of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank. Our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 313. We're back to talk shop this afternoon with Craig Brown. Let's see, I've got an unknown here, and I'm not sure I got the guts to pull the trigger on this one.
Shoot.
Nah, I'll let you read it, and then you tell me. And then I'll find it. I'll find the one that I want. This is going to have to be... Well, apparently not.
It is funny.
Yeah, funny, but not applicable for us. Okay. Then our quote this afternoon comes from Alice Roosevelt Longworth.
Yes.
Okay. 1884 to 1980. Teddy's daughter.
She must be related to somebody.
Yeah, yeah. Quote, "If you haven't got anything nice to say about anybody, come sit next to me."
Oh,
see, now that one's humorous
and
available for public consumption.
Yes,
yeah.
Good choice.
Thank you. Tact rarely, but occasionally shows up.
You can't edit yourself. That's good to know.
Craig, as campus minister, I would think that you get all kinds of different opportunities to talk to folks about this or that or this question or that question. What are some of the most challenging questions you get as being the minister?
The most challenging question I've ever had in 18 years, and it took me almost two class periods to digest it with the
students.
Can
I guess?
Yes, go ahead, guess.
There's a Papstein in my class?
No.
Oh, okay.
It involved no Papsteins.
Oh, well, carry forth, sir.
So your family's safe. Yeah. But it was the idea that the kind of cognitive dissonance that arises between the ideas that we have been gifted by God with free will and also that God is all-knowing, so that he knows everything that happens to us in our linear lives, but we have free will to choose whatever it is we want to do. And to get the students to understand that point, that God knows what we're going to do and we have free will to do it, but even if he sees us about to make a mistake, he will not step in to stop us actively, so that he allows us to make our own mistakes. And that just like fried the brains. I think it was a sophomore class. And we spent almost 90 solid minutes in over 2 days talking about those ideas of how we are not predestined to do what we're going to do, even though God knows what we're going to do. We're free to choose it, even though God knows what it is we're going to choose.
So they kind of saw it as a catch-22?
Yeah, exactly. It was a cyclical argument for them. They couldn't break it. It was like, And I mean, and that's the one question I'll never forget as long as I live.
What was the magic phrase?
To get them to disconnect those. There wasn't a dawning phrase. It was 90 minutes of restating the same thing 150 times before they said, "Oh, okay."
I had visions of rulers and knuckles.
it could be. It's challenging and fun. I mean, I wouldn't have done it for 18 years if it didn't make my own faith grow to talk to teenagers about these ideas.
So what about those kids that you have, and there must be some, that don't have a spiritual grounding or foundation, whether it's neutral or whether it is atheistic or agnostic that they came from? Do you try to work with those folks?
Absolutely.
And kind of give them a sense or an idea, or at least, hey, if you're curious, here's kind of the steps to go through to kind of start to put that together for yourself.
That's kind of the St. Bernard's. That's our religious curriculum. Is the Catholic phraseology is it's catechesis and evangelization together. So catechesis is the formal academic giving of information, and evangelization is sharing the teacher's faith with the students. So we do that in our religious ed classes. We have those two components operating all the time. And for those kids who come to us, and last time we talked, I mentioned that our international students from the People's Republic of China, a lot of them, most of them come to us, they've never even heard Jesus' name. They don't know that person at all. So it's an introductory, it's a chance to start from the scratch. And that's all we really can do. The interesting thing about Christianity is that it's not, and this is an old saying, it's not my saying, and I don't know who to attribute it to, but
someone far, far older than you?
Yes.
Okay.
At least a decade or so. But Christianity is not so much a religion as it is a relationship, that it's forming a relationship with this person we call Jesus, getting to know him and sharing who you are with him and forming a bond, a personal one-on-one bond with him. So that's kind of the key to religious ed for us, is introducing them to our understanding of who Jesus is, not his, and sharing personally my love for him, how he's grown on me, and how we've grown together, myself and Jesus, and sharing that with the kids. So getting them to know that it's not just facts and dates, it's not just rules and regulations, it's getting to know a person and loving that person and allowing them to love you. So that's how we work at it with the people who've never heard of him, or they come with a very diluted idea of who Jesus is. Just by growing up in Western civilization, you have at least an idea.
Easter, Christmas?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Easter,
okay.
Christmas.
Okay, well, and now Fat Tuesday.
Fat Tuesday, yeah, becoming more and more popular.
Yeah, imagine that happening, huh? Jeez Louise. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:19. We'll be back with more from Craig Brown.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. If you've never been to Eureka's Sequoia Park Zoo, or haven't in a long time, you're in for a treat. Eureka is one of the smallest cities in the nation to have a zoo, and quite a zoo it is. It's among the redwood trees and specializes in a variety of small animals. Many exhibits have been updated, with more on the way. A big favorite is the red panda family. If you think of pandas as black and white, big, and chewing on bamboo, think again. Red pandas are small with reddish coats and white faces. Watch them scamper on their trees. The pink flamingo flock will dazzle you as you pass their pond. There are many more zoo pleasures awaiting young and old alike. There's a cafe and gift shop, too. On Wednesdays, all visitors come in at half price. For days and hours, see their website, sequoiaparkzoo.net. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:24. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Craig Brown. So, Craig, you get some interesting questions from some of the kids that are perhaps not grounded in Christianity, might be the simplest way.
Mm-hmm.
What about those who come from a Zen background, or I guess now yoga is one that is beginning, I guess, the recognition of yoga that it's a religious philosophy, not just stretching muscles.
Mm-hmm.
is now becoming more and more prevalent. How do you deal with those questions or questions from those folks that, that follow that? Is that something that is same or are they different?
I really haven't had much experience with that. And it's actually some of our students have come to us with fairly strong Buddhist backgrounds. And that they're easy to talk to because there are parallels in the teachings of Buddha and the teachings of Jesus that you can make with them.
Such as
the idea of compassion, the idea of being in the world but not of the world, to have this kind of distance between you and the world, and to cognitively accept different values than the world around you. So that's similar in Buddhism and Christianity. So we can use that to start a dialogue about who Jesus is.
Does charity exist in Buddhism?
Yes, definitely, yeah. Social justice is, especially in the last couple of decades, Buddhism has become very strong in addressing social justice issues. The Dalai Lama, the leader of Tibetan Buddhism, is largely responsible for that, I think, is that he, due to his experience with the People's Republic of China taking over Tibet and him having to leave the country and set up an exile government, that's made him really, really involved in the world and in contemporary history. And so he started making some outreach towards social justice, and some there's a Vietnamese Buddhist, Thich Nhat Hanh, who is very strong in social justice issues, and so there is that the idea of compassion for other beings, for all beings, is very very strong strain in Buddhism.
Because that doesn't really exist that much in China, does it? Or traditionally,
not since the Communist Revolution, anyway. Yeah, the whole recent religious history, life of China has been pretty eviscerated in the last 50 years or so.
So how do you integrate the concept of charity or giving of yourself for others?
Well, the Buddhist concept is that it is more or less just the right thing to do. And the idea that you're following
God's will?
It's
or cricket's
not,
will
not
or whatever.
Not it's more of a humanistic kind of thing with Buddhism, that it is the proper human way to treat other creatures. That Buddha taught compassion for all living creatures. And so one is to live a life where you don't hurt anybody that you don't have to, and you treat others as... The golden rule exists in Buddhism. It's not worded the same as in the Christian text, but it's the same idea that you should treat others as you would want to be treated. And that's a Buddhist teaching. So you can use that. You can launch from that.
The High Holy Days.
Yes.
For Catholicism, are pretty straight up.
It's a pretty old-fashioned phrase.
Really?
The High Holy Days.
Oh. Watch this. Latin. When the kids ask about Easter, Good Friday, Lent, if they have no reference points, how do you start to develop some of those underpinnings so that maybe they don't participate, but they might be able to better appreciate?
Yeah, and that's an important goal, too. We want everybody who leaves St. Bernard's, if they're not Catholic, to at least to be able to explain to people in the world that they meet why Catholics do the things they do. So, and all those high holy days stem from the life of Christ. So if in the 4 years they've been with us in high school or the 12 years they've been with us through the whole program, hopefully they know by the time they leave who Jesus was, and it's easy to explain why Easter is so important, the idea of behind the 40 days of Lent and all that. So it's all grounded on the person of Jesus and his life that we understand through the Gospels, and so we just use that.
With the secular evolution of Christmas, does that become confusing for the kids in class to separate the two or to understand that there may be connections, but they're pretty loose at this point?
Yeah, and I think it does. And I think it's revelatory to a lot of kids that, again, the idea of Christmas, the idea that it's the birth of Christ, is in our culture. And there's no way, it's like a fish swimming in water. You can't escape it. So everybody has an idea of what Christmas is originally about. the challenge for us is to make them see the importance of the origin of Christmas and how, if you don't consciously live that and observe it during your Christmas family observances, then it loses its
celebration.
Meaning.
Celebration.
Celebration. Thank you.
I know, that must be right up there with High Holy Day. Huh?
But it is. I mean, it is a challenge to fight the materialistic view of a lot of those days. Easter has lost a lot of its sacramental nature, its sacred nature. It's become a day of, you know, eggs and bunnies and candy, and it's almost like Valentine's Day for
relax,
a lot of
buddy. KINS News and Information Time hits 3:30.
Decade of Difference, making a real difference for the future of the North Coast. This is Jim Ritter with Humboldt Live in the Arcata High School Career and College Center. Do you have life and work experiences that could be of benefit to our local youth? We're recruiting community members to mentor and share ideas with our middle and high school students. Please call me at 839-5114 for more information. The Decade of Difference, making a real difference for the future of the North Coast.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Time, 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with the campus minister at St. Bernard's, Craig Brown. Craig, trying to figure out whether someone is raised in Catholicism or somebody has no Christianity reference at all, putting together the historical components of it, because I would think that would be a really, really cool class to teach.
Yeah.
Here's the Roman guys. Here's the Egyptians. Here's this. Here's that. Putting together timelines, time frames, putting everybody together, and who were the contemporaries of Christ? And Peter. And what about this pope and that pope? Is that part of this whole grand picture of what is known as Christianity?
Absolutely. Yeah. And you can. You can study through time the deepening and more subtle understanding of who Jesus of Nazareth and how he informs our faith as that developed over the last 2,000 years. And it's actually through my intellect and through the study of the history of the church that I came to Catholicism myself. It was an intellectual project for me first, and then the faith came after that. So I investigated the church. I came from no religious background. My family never went to church and never prayed. And it was the message of Jesus of being unselfish and selfless, and the definition of love as being self-sacrificial, giving yourself to others and not thinking of yourself first, that attracted me. Because by the time I was in my mid-20s, I realized that I was living for me, and that was it. And it felt really empty. Once I found that message, that got me looking at, okay, what is this thing called Christianity, and studying the history of Christianity and figuring out that, for me, the best I could find out, the Catholic Church most represented what Jesus himself started. So it had the deepest historical connections with the actual Christ and the 12 apostles. So I figured if I'm going to be a Christian, I might as well start with the church that looks like he started. So
what is
that? I would love to share that with the kids.
What are the biggest surprises when you bring the historical elements of the early church into the teaching? Is it who was alive, what was going on, where they were located? How do they?
Some of the surprises are exactly how much of a backwater this place, this part of the world was, what we call the Holy Land, Palestine, that it was. A major crossroads for several caravan routes, but it in itself was not that built up, and it was a place you passed through going from, you know, Byzantine Empire to Egypt and from Rome and Greece the other way towards North Africa, and it was constantly being conquered and taken over by one empire after another, you know, for centuries, and that's interesting to kids. I think the fact that this man who changed Western civilization and the world came from a place that had no political power, no status, And that's interesting. And the other thing that's interesting for them when they study history is how much our worship and praise and our ideas about Jesus were true in the first two centuries that are the same here in the 21st century.
Not the changes, but the consistency.
Yes, yeah. And that's interesting to point out to them of how things have changed. But what's that French saying? The more things change, the more they stay the same?
Oh, I thought it was c'est la vie.
It's something like that.
Okay.
But the translation is the more things change, the more they stay the same. And I think you can say that to a great extent about Christianity is that while things have changed and our knowledge of Jesus has become more subtle, we still, you know, break bread together. We still read the Psalms from the Old Testament. We still sing the same hymns.
You mean that folk music stuff was alive well back then?
No,
Michael was rowing his boat for how long?
That's one of the evolutions.
Oh, okay.
They didn't have folk masses in the first century.
Oh, I knew there was something I liked about it.
The Psalms were set to music. We've lost the music. That would be an incredible archaeological find, to find some kind of notation of how the Psalms were actually sung. So that...
Really?
Yeah.
They were actually songs?
They were written by David.
Or hymns?
According to our tradition. They were written to be sung in the temple during religious ceremonies of the Jewish High Holy Days.
So now how does something like that just... disappear? Somebody
That's
decides
a good question.
That they don't want to sing anymore, so they change the tradition?
143 psalms, but not one piece of sheet music for it, or whatever they had back in those
days. I'm sure papyrus wasn't. Caiaphas, let's put it as sandals too.
That's the interesting thing about history is that we just, unless it's been recorded, we don't know what happened. And you know, one of the interesting things about Jesus is that there is some historical record of him outside of the Christian community, but it's awfully small, and it just, you know, raises questions, which is interesting, to raise questions.
How do you get the kids, or anybody, I guess, to grasp the concept that the Gospels were written years after, and in some situations, by folks who never met Jesus?
Right, yeah.
To be able to quote him directly. How does that one come together?
Yeah, well, when we talk a lot about that, and you have to understand that the Hebrew culture was largely, at that time, the first century before Christ and the century after Christ, they were nomadic people to a large extent. I mean, a large part of their culture were still shepherds and goat herds, and the whole idea of caravanning goods from place to place was strong, so that they were great travelers. And so telling stories around the campfire was a huge part of their culture, and memorizing stories and passing those down from generation to generation. And that's how the Gospels were initially passed down, was by word of mouth, sharing those stories at home churches where they gathered in the first century to worship and praise God. And it wasn't until, you know, 60, 70 years after his resurrection and ascension into heaven, that it took 60 or 70 years for somebody to say, look, these stories are starting to change. People are adding things that didn't happen, or they're dropping really important parts that should be shared. So then they said, okay, we've got to have a written record. And the church was growing too. By the sixth or seventh decade after Christ, the church, the home communities that they used to meet in homes and have actual dinners, shared dinners, those were getting bigger and bigger, and they had to find a bigger, more public place to meet. And bringing in those many new members of the church, there had to be something written down so that they could instruct them. And so that's when the Gospels were written down, for purposes of catechesis or sharing the faith and bringing in new members.
KINS, News and Information Times, 4:43. We'll be back with more from Craig Brown.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions, 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass, 7 p.m. Spanish Mass, and on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:47. We're back to Talk Shop, final segment with Craig Brown. Craig, what are some of the things that are out there, the challenges that either the kids at school have got or the parents have that they kind of wrestle the most with? Do you ever get the opportunity to talk to the parents of the kids about some of the religious studies and let them kind of have their question and answer sessions?
Oh, there's several. The idea of modesty. What does it mean to be a modest person? That's a challenge for not just the students, but the whole families. The sacramentality of marriage. The idea that marriage is to be forever and always. The idea that marriage is supposed to be between a man and a woman.
There's a lot of those.
Now,
are those just contemporaneous or contemporary issues, or has the church dealt with those through the years?
Marriage is fairly, I would say, fairly contemporary. The whole idea, a lot of those other hot-button issues.
Abortion probably doesn't go back too far.
It goes all the way back to the Old Testament.
Really?
Yes. You can find passages in the Old and New Testaments saying that, I wish I could quote scripture verse on this, but states that that is one of the great sins is to take the life of an unborn child. Or to take, I think in the Old Testament they caution against, it's something like women shall not take a certain herb that will induce premature birth. So that's abortion. The teaching of the abortion is at least 2,000 years old, the church against that. So that isn't contemporary. Death penalty is fairly contemporary. The churches stand against that. And that is hard for a lot of people to agree with because a lot of our justice is compelled by a sense of getting even. Say in your language?
Evening the score.
Evening the score. Yeah. And that's not where justice, the Bible, you know, Jesus said that Bible, you know, justice doesn't come from getting even, evening the score, that God's justice isn't that way, and our justice shouldn't be either. So if you have, if a culture has the capability of caretaking people.
Now, that brings Father Fried's trial.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm sure the kids haven't popped you with this one yet, but you guys have probably gone through it. The system says murder one, death penalty. The church says no.
No. Father Eric Fried would say no.
How does that play out then?
It's actually been a very relaxed conversation.
That would be 10 seconds.
Okay. It's been a real chance to teach. It's been a very teachable moment.
Well, hopefully we don't have too many more of those.
God bless us.
Thanks. Goodbye, Greg.
Thank you, Brian.
We've been Talking Shop this afternoon with Craig Brown. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out, make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow.